This is an IEEE Computer Society podcast. My name is David Alan Greer, and this is In Our Time. I know exactly one rocket scientist, though I know you may not believe me. His name is Derek, and this is a story about him. Or perhaps it's a story which appears to be about him. Today's essay is entitled Derek, the Rocket Scientist. Many couples have testy discussions about golf, or tennis, or rock climbing, or soccer. But my friends Derek and Sarah are the only couple I know who have had an awkward conversation about rockets. Sarah and I have been friends since childhood. Our fathers worked together at the old Burroughs Corporation. When she told me that she was marrying a rocket scientist, I was both pleased and intrigued. I was happy to see her find a partner, and interested to learn what sort of a person a rocket scientist might be. Like many an individual who has followed the American space program, I speculated that someone who sends machines beyond Earth's atmosphere might have a special view of the world, that earthly concerns might have a celestial tint. I quickly found that the opposite was actually true, that celestial activities were rooted on the common things of Earth. "I'll be back in time for dinner," were the first words I ever heard Derek say. The three of us had agreed to meet for coffee at a restaurant near Sarah's apartment. I was visiting their city on business and had taken an extra day to meet Derek and to share a year's worth of news with Sarah. Both Sarah and Derek had arrived before I found the place, and the two were already in the midst of a vigorous discussion. "It's 2 hours out there," said Sarah, "and 2 hours back. You won't be home for dinner." "I'll leave early," replied Derek. "I'll get back in plenty of time." At this point, I was certain I understood the conversation between the two of them. The subject was clearly golf. Derek and his buddies had a tea time for noon at some distant and probably very expensive course. Sarah doubted that her fiancé could finish the game, drive home, take a shower, and arrive on time at the place where we were all to have dinner. I was so confident of my judgment that I made a misguided attempt to diffuse the anger. "Playing a round this afternoon?" I asked after we were introduced. "No," replied Sarah. "He's going over the mountain to fly rockets." "Oh," I said, grasping the fact that Derek, the rocket scientist, was also Derek, the rocket hobbyist. "I finished this one last weekend," Derek interjected. "We think we can get it up to 35,000 feet. There was not that much more to say, though many words continued to be spoken. As a couple, Derek and Sarah were still in a relatively early phase of their relationship. They had not yet combined households, merged their social goals, or even found a common way of discussing their needs. Their conversation analyzed every aspect of Derek's schedule for the day, the potential problems and the need to be back in the city at a certain time. It ended, as such things often do, on an awkward note. Derek was resolved to get his rocket flown. Sarah was not convinced that he was going to be able to arrive on time for our reservation at the Bayside restaurant at 6:30 p.m. We could only hope that all things would work for good, and that the day's events would not be disrupted by poor planning, a shifting wind, or the happenstance of traffic congestion on I-95. Derek, the rocket scientist, is technically a systems engineer. He oversees the design and construction of digital systems for large spacecraft projects. His job is to make the individual boxes that constitute the spacecraft electronics work as a whole. The process is tricky and fraught with problems. He can specify all the basic functions of a system in a planning document, but such documents still leave a great deal of discretion to the people who are building the basic components. "You can't design everything yourself," he explains. "You have to trust the other engineers to articulate what they can do and explain the shortcomings of their design, and also to suggest what can be done to make the system work." Trust is a difficult thing to an engineer, as it involves history, character, and an ability to put aside your own goals for the good of the whole. When are participants pursuing an unusual solution that will benefit the project? And when are they only indulging in their own intellectual curiosity at the group's expense? Entering into a project and assuming that all parties automatically trust each other is like entering into a marriage without acknowledging the fact that you are about to share a bathroom with someone who has a very different idea of how such a facility should be used. It's all too easy to claim that the gender that sees little reason to return the toilet seat to the horizontal position has a deep character flaw, or that those who believe that shower rods were invented as a place to dry underwear have moral shortcomings. But such claims do little to help a marriage meet its design goals, and to do nothing to build trust. Once, while I was sitting in Derek's office talking with him about nothing in particular, he picked up a cable from a side table and threw it across his desk. This, he said, is an example of extreme silliness. No one is willing to take responsibility for the cable and its problems. My component group says, that's a cable. We don't take responsibility for cables. But the cable guy says, that cable contains a transformer, so it's a component, and it's not our responsibility. We often try to solve such problems with an overall plan, but such plans can have failings of their own. You can establish a budget for power, or for time, or for weight, and make the different units compete for their share. But in the end, you might have a device that only fosters more problems. Derek once worked on a large project that divided a satellite's outer skin and tried to make sure that each component group got the share that it needed. The component group fought hard to get the prime real estate on the spacecraft. In one design, two keep devices were only 10 degrees apart, Derek said. It was an efficient use of the skin, but it posed a serious problem. One device was a navigation sensor that had to find the sun, Derek told me. The other was a scientific experiment that would have been destroyed if it absorbed large amounts of solar radiation. Apparently, for a time, each group tried to blame the other for the mistake. Neither was willing to trust someone else to find a solution. Silliness is, of course, in the eye of the beholder. Irresponsibility is also not easy to identify. When you're close to a design, you usually can't imagine that others don't see it as you do. In engineering organizations, indeed in many organizations, we try many different techniques to get people to articulate their needs, to listen to each other. Ultimately, we hope to understand and trust each other. We have team social gatherings. We take our staff on a retreat. We play team-building games and give everybody imprinted sportswear with a common logo. Such things might not directly build trust, but they give team members a common experience, and common experiences can often be used to create that trust. In the spring of a difficult war, the engineer and aviator Charles Lindbergh looked to common experiences to rebuild some of the trust that he had lost in his marriage. Lindbergh was living apart from his wife so that he could work on military aircraft, but he was also feeling that his marriage was distant and strained. Their relationship had been rubbed raw by 15 years of intense public scrutiny. Every aspect of Lindbergh and his wife had been reported in the press. After the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, that press was especially critical of the couple because of their isolationist politics, a stance that argued that the U.S. should stay out of the war. Riding from a hotel room outside a Michigan bomber factory, Lindbergh took a small step toward reconnecting with his wife. "The moon is at Bathurst takeoff height," he wrote to her. Such words could be taken as an attempt at poetry, an effort to charm his wife through pretty words. But they were actually a shorthand reference to a common experience, a time when they had learned to work together. In the early years of their marriage, they had flown all over the world to survey air routes. They had gone to Europe, to Asia, to Africa, where Bathurst could be found. Even though Lindbergh was the skilled engineer, he had split the work with his wife. In particular, she was responsible for navigation and for communication. At Bathurst, they had an especially difficult departure. and had to work together to get the plane airborne. Each had to shoulder responsibility. Each had to trust the other. No one else could help. The dynamics of marriage might be either easier or harder than those of an engineering team. A marriage can be sustained by social forces that are never quite captured by a contract or a design deadline. Occasionally, as in a national emergency, the pursuit of a grand goal or the mere joy of doing something for the first time, an engineering team can find a little extra bit of commitment that binds the group or the team together. But, as we know, trust is often built upon history and upon common experience. Derek the rocket scientist often struggled to find enough of those qualities to hold his projects together. "We were once working on a fairly complicated spacecraft," he told me, "for which we contracted with two different firms and got two very different results. Both firms followed the specifications and both built instruments that ultimately worked. However, one firm devoted most of its resources to building the sensor itself, while the second spent more time thinking about how their device would communicate with other satellite systems. The first firm had a roll-your-own interface for its sensor," noted Derek. "They argued that they had no incentive to follow any one of the military or civilian network standards, as they would never build enough of the sensors to recover their investment. It's not as if they were building a laser printer and could recover their costs over a production run of 100,000 units. The firm delivered its device well before the deadline, but Derek's group could not make it talk with the other satellite systems. We had a hard time making the thing work. We continued to debug that interface after we had delivered the satellite to Cape Canaveral. We were working on it almost until liftoff. The second company spent less time on its instrument, but connected its work to a standard interface. Its machine was late, very late. The company had to deliver the sensor directly to the Cape, but we plugged it into the system, and it worked fine the first time. We weren't worried about it," Derek reported, "because it talked in a standard way. We could trust it." Not all group events are common experiences, and not all of them build trust. Early in my career, I was part of a software group that went on a team and trust-building retreat. We listened to a talk about the company, we played a few games. We were encouraged to speak freely about our feelings. We were all asked to wear tennis shirts marked with the company logo and some heartening phrases such as "best software in the known universe." At some point, I noticed that the women in the group were not especially enthusiastic about the day's events. When I asked how they were doing, I got a bit of an earful in return. "Someone hasn't thought about much of what we're doing," remarked one of the colleagues. "We're wearing men's clothing and playing men's games. I feel like I'm wearing a flour sack and being sympathetic soul at a high school track meet. What's in it for me?" On that day that I met Derek the rocket scientist, I think he probably had a clear idea of what was in it for him and for Sarah in their relationship. I don't remember if he arrived at the restaurant on time that night, or if he had had a shower, or if the moon hung over the horizon. But I do recall that it was a wonderful evening. You've been listening to In Our Time. This podcast was based on an essay which was published in the February 2008 issue of Computer. More about Computer can be found at www.computer.org. This is the homepage of the Computer Society. To find Computer Magazine, click on the Technical Magazines button. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, you can send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, and you can find their materials at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.